Get ready. The DE Talk podcast starts now. Insightful conversations and dialogue helping you put the human factor back in HR. Do you believe your life is a series of events happening to you, or is life responding to you? Changing the narrative and how we communicate with self, or the story we tell ourselves, can have lasting effects on not only our ability to view the world, but also impact the roles we play and the individuals surrounding us. While you ponder your answer, today's guest is truly an inspiring woman who claims she's just a messenger, given a voice to bring together realness and connection to self that people don't always feel comfortable talking about in a business setting. Given the passion behind her work, she is so much more. I have the pleasure of welcoming Amy Woodall to the podcast, an award-winning podcast host herself of The Conscious Habit, a dedicated educator helping to create conscious leaders and mindful cultures. Welcome to the DE Talk podcast, Amy.
Well, thank you. I dig that intro. I'm like, can I get a copy of that? I want to share that with my marketing team. I think we need to copy that.
Well, I have an outstanding marketing team, as you know.
You do.
So it's so great to have you join us today. I'm really excited about this. So
me too.
I'll learn some more about you. So that'll be good. So given the impact that you've had on the Direct Employers leadership team, we've known you now for several years. I don't think I have even scratched the surface on describing the work that you do. So take a moment to share with our listeners a bit about your background.
Gosh, it's hard for me to even scratch the surface on the work that I do. I guess I'll kind of start from the how did we get here? You know, maybe jump ahead a little bit. For well over a decade, I have had the great fortune of working with just some really damn good companies, some great companies who they want to improve performance, they want to improve culture. And I would be hired in to work specifically with sales teams at first. And we were working on sales performance, creating processes and common language to help up-level those sales teams. And then it began to lead through, okay, sales and operations and or sales or service, we realized hate each other in every language and every culture and everywhere that you go. And so then the work, it didn't pivot, but, you know, there was an additional focus on how do we get operations and service, the executors of the teams, to speak this common language too? And how do we bridge that gap, you know, so that they see each other as customers? And simultaneously, I was going through my own, I don't know if you call it spiritual awakening. I don't know. I just know that I was achieving more than I ever had and yet was not feeling that fulfillment that I believed would come from success. And so it had me sort of being like, have I been lied to? Because
what am I going to do next?
Right. Like I thought that once you make a certain amount of money or you have a certain title, like that's when you get that sigh of relief and you're like, oh, life feels good. But that didn't happen. And as I'm helping, you know, bridge the gap between sales and service and sales and operations, what I noticed was their biggest challenge was drama. And leaders' biggest challenge was trying to put out the drama or manage the drama in these different departments. And so I was being called to coach more often. And what we really began to notice was that the drama began inward, much like my search for fulfillment I thought existed externally. In truth, fulfillment was an inside job and the stories I chose to believe and how much I liked myself, how much I accepted myself from where I was. And I could see that was the same stuff leaders were being faced with, you know, dealing in the drama all the time, that the drama began inside the hearts and heads of their people. And they were being tasked with solving external problems that could never get to that root. And so I'm coaching Conscious Habit. It didn't have a name, by the way. I didn't know what the hell we were going to call it. And one day a client looks at me and says, is this Sandler stuff we're working on? Because that was my background and where I spent so much time. And I said, it's not. And they're like, well, what do you call this? I'm like, I really don't know. I guess we've been working on consciousness. And so Conscious Habit was born really just out of
like the name of it a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Perfect.
Out of that like necessity of can we get to the root of where the results really begin?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we've worked with you during the Sandor years and then during the new Conscious Habit years, and you have such an impactful message no matter what you do. So I mean, we'll talk more about that, but that's why we wanted to have you here today. So
yeah.
You made an interesting comment, and it's what we run into with the recruiting or the talent acquisition staffs, and the compliance staffs. They don't really get along real well. And we try to bridge that gap. And it's maybe we'll have some people call you to help do that. I try myself, but it's a challenge. So I also know that you are a certified meditation coach.
And sometimes we have to be honest with you.
Meditation coach. What is your goal with meditation?
Well, as I mentioned, in that sort of awakening of how do I find this peace and calm within, for me, I realized that all of my dissatisfaction began with the voice in the head and not realizing that it wasn't me and believing everything it had to say. And so I started practicing meditation just as a way to create some calm in the storm. And it was so impactful because what it allowed was for me to create space between the thinking and the realizing. And that space between is awareness. And awareness is the start of any change that we want. And that awareness, you know, kind of molded into more consciousness, the ability to take on more ownership, the more curiosity, more love for self. And so I went through the certification, became a certified meditation teacher. And I don't teach it in like studio settings or group settings, except for when I do our retreats every year. I do host a women's.
I still want to go.
You will come. So yeah. A High Vibe Tribe retreat is what it's called. I get to co-host with a dear friend of mine. That's the only time I teach it in a group setting. But I became certified because there were certain clients where I'm like, I've got to teach them either how to breathe or mindfulness or meditation so that they can get that space themselves. They can create that space of awareness to allow those shifts to happen so that they can get to the root of where all of this drama begins, which is within.
I've actually, just so you know, I've actually utilized your breathing exercises that we learned. Haven't done the meditation yet, but that's on my list.
It's a big start. That's a big start. Just yeah. Even calm. And I think, especially if any listeners and I mean, I know for you, you definitely would put yourself in this category of high achiever, right? Of just like, there's stuff to be done. What's the next thing? What's the next? How do we grow? We get so caught up in the doing, which is, it has a lot of satisfaction in itself, but it can be exhausting that we forget the being, and we are human beings, not human doings. So it's good on you for connecting to the being with just breath.
That's interesting. We're not human doings. That's good. I like that. So let me ask you, how do you incorporate mindfulness practices into your work? And what would you say to someone who says, I don't have the time to incorporate mindfulness practices like me, the human doings? What do you say to those people?
Well, the way we incorporate in small ways, because I always think it's important to meet people where they are. You can't shove something down their throat if they're uncertain of it. You can challenge people, right? And sort of like challenge the narrative, but you cannot shove something down someone's throat. So the small ways are just teaching like little just breathing exercises. You don't even have to close your eyes. You can just do this thing that we all do to stay alive, but let's just do it more intentionally. And so I'll teach them some breathing. I also like to teach people to be able to identify when their body is in fight or flight, because there's a lot of times that our nervous system is not regulated and it causes us to make irrational decisions in our business and in our lives. It causes us to have more frustrations in areas that it's not really deserving because we're in a stress response. So I'll teach people how to regulate their nervous system through, it could be humming, it could be eye movements.
Humming. I have... God, I had a friend whose mom, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it just brought back this horrible memory. I used to go to the lake with them every weekend when I was a kid. It was an hour drive. And the mother whistled. Oh my gosh. If I hear somebody whistling today, it brings back immediate memories. I just feel like, you got to stop. But I couldn't say anything. I was 10 years old.
It's immediately getting your body dysregulated over there. We can
so you said these mindfulness techniques.
Breathe. You know, there's a joke in my household. There's a joke in my house. Not even a joke. Like, one of my things is if I hear somebody chewing, that I will imagine hugging their face with a pillow when they sleep. That is a sign that I am dysregulated. And so whenever my husband's chewing and I just give him that look, like, why? Like, why?
You're going to be here in the morning?
What? Yeah. He'll be like, have you meditated today? Like, no, I haven't, but that's neither here nor there. Like, so So if there are things, I think when we're not doing it, when we are dysregulated, our buttons, the things that just drive us crazy anyway, we all have them, but they get bigger and bigger and easier to push. And so that's the way that I incorporate it into the work we do. She had a flashback, a little PTSD coming in for her.
Exactly, because of whistling. So, you know what? Tell me, though, about some of your favorite podcasts. What do you have any that stand out? Any favorite guests on your podcast?
Ooh, guests on my podcast for sure. And then also favorite like podcasts that are out there in the world. But guests on the podcast. So I have been a big fan of Cy Wakeman for a long time. And she's, I love her work because she also does drama work. And so I get to quote her because she has this great phrase about people driving their BMWs.
Oh, I know.
Right? Stands for bitching, moaning, and whining. And so our work is similar in a lot of ways. And our kind of spiritual philosophies are very similar. And I reached out to her after I had three episodes. This woman's a New York Times bestselling author. I had three episodes. And I reached out to her and just like in a very genuine message. And she said, I would love to be on your podcast.
Wow.
And that was cool. Like a reminder to me of just ask. Like we create these.
If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Always. We create rules and limitations for ourselves where they don't necessarily exist. So I love Cy's episode. She has two on the podcast. We've had a lot of fun guests who bring different insights and backgrounds and probably a lot like you do. Like, it's just fun to get to hear people's story and learn from them.
And you find how many things you have in common that you never would have expected. Mm-hmm. And how many good stories there are.
Yes.
So. Okay.
Yes.
Right. I'm going to have to listen to that. I'm going to get some information before we sign off today so people can hear some of these podcasts of yours as well. So, all right. So balancing life, whether it's work or personal, is something that everyone deals with, and oftentimes emotions bleed into each area. If you're unhappy at home, you might be unhappy at work, and vice versa. I think the goal of today's conversation is to share some insights into how we can help people own their shit and really be more mindful about their approaches in all areas. And I think that's what people loved about you, because you just come right out with it. And so let's dive into owning your shit or owning your 50. And we talk about that a lot around here.
It makes my heart so happy that it's talked about. And that in the work that I was doing in organizations, in the drama work, what I could see was that people were putting their focus on the things outside of them that they couldn't control. And they weren't taking any onus as to how they were a part of the problem that was created. Nothing is good or bad until we give it our definition. And so if we've thrown our hat in the ring to say, this frustrates me or I'm angry, we immediately have some ownership into that. And I believe, you know, the more that we are able to take radical ownership, the more we're able to lean into joy and satisfaction and peace and love and like all the things we desire to have and to be. And so the things we can own, how we think. But we can't even pay attention to our thinking unless we take the time to sit quietly. And, you know, you asked earlier and, you know, what do you say to somebody who doesn't have the time to meditate? I'm like, if you don't have the time, there's a saying that basically if you don't have 10 minutes to meditate, take an hour, because we need it more. We need it even more. So ownership is being able to see the thoughts and figure out, you know, why am I angry? Why does this frustrate me? Why do I believe this person is good or bad? Why do I believe the situation is good or bad? But again, we have to have the space to do that. Taking extreme ownership over our actions, over our emotions, those are the things that we are able to control. But if I'm only focused on you and, well, you should have done this and you should have and they oughta, and that we are trying to control the things that we have no control over.
That's my daughter's favorite comment, is only control what you is within you, your ability to control.
Mm.
Can't control things that are beyond your ability.
Right. And our satisfaction comes along with that, too, because if I'm trying to control things I literally have no control over, my happiness is always going to be in the hands
of
someone else or an outcome or outside of me. So to me, extreme ownership and that own your shit, you know, own your 50 is basically like you can't own it for everybody else. You got to own your part. That's where that came from. But to me, like that's a big leap in us being able to just be more conscious, loving, you know, human beings on the planet who can contribute in greater ways and diminish the drama.
So do you believe then that if the leader can accomplish that, that they can in turn help their families, their employees, their teams or whatever? Is that, I mean, you have to kind of fix yourself before you can help fix anybody else.
It all starts at the top, because we also create the standards and expectations, right? If you have a leader, you know, like yourself, who's like, I hold myself highly accountable. I want people to call me out. I want to have transparency. I want to be vulnerable. I'm going to be honest with you. When you create an environment of that, a culture is just a collection of energies, right? It's a collection of energies. The spirit of our organization is based on the spirit of the humans who bring it together. And if you have an authentic, you know, highly just somebody who's willing to own their shit at the top, that expectation trickles down.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about just, you know, having a balance. And just at our town hall meeting, I finally realized that everyone's talking about a work-life balance. Mm-hmm. And I said, we're going to get rid of that terminology. It's going to be a life balance. Mm-hmm. Because work is part of your life, but your personal life is part of your work. I mean, you know, it's we need to focus on having a life and having a balance in your life,
yes.
not work and separate it from the rest of your life, because one relies on the other.
And I think work, that if anybody has that struggle of work-life balance, and I love that, it is like, we're whole humans. We take ourselves everywhere. It's because we're trying to live up to a standard that was either created by society or ourselves that is ridiculous. And the biggest challenge is that we're not present for where we are. And so I always say, wherever your feet is, put your head there. Because if you're at work, just be present with that work that's being done. And if you're at home, be present with your kids. What often happens is we feel the guilt in between of I should have, or I've got to, or I need to. And that being out of alignment with presence is what creates that we feel lack of balance. Balance does not happen on a calendar. It begins in our mind and where our focus and attention is.
Well, I agree with you. And I think just this conversation, Amy, it's something we can all learn, and we all also need to relearn. You know, I was just reading an article yesterday about how important listening is for leaders. And I have certain people that drive me crazy. And I say, you need to listen to hear, not listen to respond. Mm-hmm. And it made an interesting point in the article about when you're talking with someone in your office or wherever, put your phone outside of your reach so you can actually listen and actually have a conversation. And I thought, I'm guilty of that, you know, and it was one of those things I need to relearn. You know, I've heard that, but I, you know, just simple things like that. So I think this conversation is good for our listeners. So, but it's things that need to be, you need to be mindful of, and you need continuous reminders as well. So, all right, let's talk about building trust as a leader or as a manager, and what needs to happen to build trust with those people around you.
I think this is like, it's the foundation of all good relationships, right? And so if it's missing in an organization, you're going to know it and feel it somehow, some way. You're either going to see it through results, you're going to see it through turnover, you're going to see it through finger pointing and blame. Like that, those are all indicators that we have a trust issue here. And I love the book, The Trusted Advisor. This is where my like understanding of trust came from, is their trust equation, which is trust is credibility, reliability, and intimacy. Those three things are super important. Do I know my stuff? Can people rely that what I say I do, I'm going to follow through with? And do I create a safe space for people to share hard things? Mm-hmm. All of that is divided by, or sort of like the, the common denominator in that equation is that we don't make everything about us, because the more we're us focused, my way, what I need, et cetera, we're operating from the ego, my expectations. We're operating from the ego, which diminishes trust. So to build trust with another human, it does require presence and curiosity and leaning in, and the ability to challenge, the ability to have them share things without you getting, you know, especially as a leader, if somebody gives us tough feedback, to really be careful not to feel like we've got to defend, and to stay open and to welcome in the challengings. Those are major leaps in developing trust.
You also at one point made the comment that loyalty is a byproduct of trust. Mm-hmm. To unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I
kind of like the turnover thing, and for obviously people are going to be loyal in that situation, but Anything else you want to add about that? Or
when we know that somebody has our back implicitly, we're going to have theirs too. We're going to want to defend them when they're not in the room. We're going to want to defend the ideas. We're going to want to defend change. We're more likely to be all in because we feel safe and supported. When we don't feel safe and supported, then let's just say change is something leaders always bring to me of like, how do we get our team to adopt a change? Well, they've got to feel that it's safe and in their best interest. And if they don't, then they're going to be driving their BMW around.
Exactly.
And telling everybody. And so, yeah, it's easier to be loyal to people that we know love us and are all in on us and know us as humans and respect our work. And, you know, of course, we're going to want to work harder and we're going to want to stay longer.
You know, it's interesting. Years ago, I had a manager who we were working on an affirmative action audit for a nuclear power plant. And we were at the office till 9 or 10 o'clock every night. And we had our aggravations with one another and we were kind of arguing. And I said, I don't think that's the right way to do it. And she said, that's what we're doing. And I said, but why? She goes, because I'm the boss. That's why. I was like, oh, you know, she was never really like that. And then, you know, the next night she said, okay, let's go get some dinner. And I'm like, I don't want to go to dinner with her, you know, but we did. On Friday, we used to all go down to the cafeteria for lunch and come up to the HR department to eat. And she came around and I got my wallet out of my purse and I said, or I started to get up and she goes, where are you going? I said, lunch, what do you mean? And she said, no, you're not. And I said, yes, I am. Why wouldn't I? And she said, because you're going home. And I said, I'm not going home. She said, yes, you are. You've worked so many hours this week. Get your butt out and go home. And, you know, I've never forgotten that. And she was, to your point, that exact type of person. If she would have asked me for anything, I mean, she did that all, stuff like that all the time. If she would have asked me for anything, I would have been there for her. That's loyalty. And, yes. You know, and that's a perfect example, I think, based on what you were saying.
And I love that she didn't take advantage of your loyalty because that's when you know it's like truly earned, is that it's there and you're all in, but someone would never take advantage of that fact, which is like, that's a great leader.
She's actually still one of my best friends. She's retired for years now already, but, you know, that's the type of relationship you like to see, you know, among coworkers and management. All right. So what are three action items for individuals on the path of consciousness to get started?
Ooh, I would say download an app or go to YouTube or something and just spend 5 minutes in the morning connecting to you. Just get connected to the being. You don't have to go out and, you know, hire a meditation coach or anything like that, but can you just spend 5 minutes with you in the morning? And news alert, we are stuck with us every second of every day. There is no escaping us. We are our only guarantee. And so if you find it hard to spend 5 minutes with yourself, well, you're stuck with you forever. I think that's a sign that we've gotten too much into the doing and disconnected from the being. So that would be one recommendation. Number two is find a buddy or a friend who's on the same path or journey, because then you find that they're attracted to podcasts or books or resources or retreats that can continue to help, you know, along that space. So we become who we hang around. If you're ready to feel more peace, hang around some peaceful people. If you're ready to feel more, you know, mindful or conscious, hang around some mindful or conscious people. They'll rub off on you. And I think the third one would be just take some time in the day to reflect. I mean, if we are just do a little reflection of how do I feel today? Where is my energy? What's given me energy? What's taken it away? You know, what are the things that have me frustrated? Creating that opportunity for more awareness and reflection, that is leveraging the 5%. Our brain is 95% unconscious and operating from old patterns, but that 5% of consciousness, if we leverage that muscle on a daily basis, we have a chance to make it 6% or 7%. And that is where growth really happens.
Any bit of improvement is a good thing.
Yes.
So I think, you know, we've gotten better during the remote work environment and that's what I wanted to do with the thought about a balanced life rather than a work-life balance. You know, I'm recognizing that there's a lot more that's important in the workplace than just getting the work done, you know, and I think that, I mean, that's a really good comment about, you know, just spending some time just on you, you know, and trying to make yourself better. you know, and feel better about yourself. I think that would create a lot of benefit to obviously the person, but to the organization as well.
It really was.
Putting your best foot forward, you know, that can't be a bad thing.
I think for every minute I spend in meditation, I gain 5 minutes back because it helps me declutter. I feel more clear. I feel like the right answers. I'm more connected to my intuition. Because I'm less stressed, I'm able to access the wiser parts of my brain because they're not clogged by, you know, the emotional part of my brain that's fighting for it. So in my mind, my belief system is I can't afford not to meditate, but everybody's on their own journey of what their first step looks like.
You know, I do find myself saying things I wish I hadn't said or doing things I could have done better. And I think, you know, we all probably do that and think later you're driving home or whatever, going to the grocery store, and you think, why did I do that? You know, that was really stupid of me, you know, or I didn't handle that very well or whatever. And that's probably why meditation could help me if I would think through some of those things. So knowing you several years, so just keep working on me. All right. So to wrap it up, you always reference some books that have been really important to you. Every time I think we've been together, what are some of your favorites that you think our listeners might benefit from reading?
I would say like these are not for everyone. I think it depends on where you are in life. And I believe that like right books, right time, right? So one that I specifically remember, I was driving down the road listening to this audiobook and I felt my perception shift and I have just not been the same human since then. And that was The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. That's what taught me about the roommate in the head, that, hey, you've got this voice in there that's talking when you aren't, and it's telling you all of these stories and you don't have to believe it. And that, it was really just right time, right book for me. So he's written several books and I think all of them are great. Untethered Soul, The Surrender Experiment, that's his autobiography. He shares his, about how he was, you know, being sued and investigated and how he just kind of kept this very zen, this space of surrender where he just knew the greatest good would happen. And so any of Michael Singer stuff I think is okay. Excellent. I'm a big fan of, I think a fun read is anything by Jen Sincero, and she's written the badass books like You Are a Badass and Badass Habits. And I think it's a fun and easy read. And if you are an audible kind of person, I am an auditory learner. Those are great listens. And then I think one that everyone who's ever read it loves is James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. And
yeah, I remember you talking.
There's a lot of good own your shit stuff in that of what are some additional things that we can manage and what are the patterns in our life? Every human, we are just a combination of patterns. And if we have some pattern recognition over what that looks like, we are able to make some major shifts happen.
Okay. Funny thing, when you commented about a badass, my daughter called me that one time. I was like,
what a call.
Okay, that's kind of how I took it. I was like, I never knew that she thought that of me. So it was kind of fun. So, yeah. So anyway, rapid fire question time. Yeah. So I'm going to go through a series of short, fun questions. And all you have to do is say the first thing that comes to your mind. And I have to tell you, I'm really loving this because, you know, you're normally on the other end when you're doing training and I get to do this.
This is true. You're like, come on, think quickly.
Yeah, I'm excited. All right. Favorite quote.
If small things have power over you, that is what you become, small.
Interesting. Okay. Based on our conversation, that's perfect. I like that. All right. Best career advice you ever received?
Bounce away. Earlier in my career, I didn't know what I wanted to be or who I was meant to be or what I was good at. And so I did all kinds of different things. And somebody said, you're like a bouncing ball. And I remember that hurt my soul. I felt like that means I'm flaky. And I called my mentor to say, you know, this is the advice I got. And he said, you're learning. Bounce away.
Interesting. Mine was never define yourself by your job title. So that was kind of interesting. Morning bird or night owl?
Morning.
Too. Yeah. All right. Because I know you love an Instagram or TikTok find, what's your favorite purchase to date?
Ooh, it's over there. I don't know if you can see it, but I am easily influenced. I am a sucker for Instagram, and I will buy like almost any ad that pops up. But I have a leather laptop bag that I want to say, and it's like chevron leather. It's like really, really pretty. And I think it was like one of those Magnolia, whoever the who's the Magnolia lady?
Oh, yeah. Joanna
Gaines. It was like some sponsored ad that popped up from there, and I was sold. And
I love it.
It was a great investment.
Yeah. And you had it for a while?
Maybe 3 years.
So, because I'm going to go look at the...
Yeah, it may be still around. Yeah. It still smells like leather.
Yeah, see,
that's my favorite.
All right. This one's a good one. Inbox zero or inbox overload?
Sister, you know why I meditate? It's because I've got about 26,582 unread emails.
You and I are so much more alike than you ever knew.
I have 500 unread text messages.
Oh my God, I don't have that.
Now, it's not unread. It's just that I didn't need to open them because there was no need to reply. Okay, so this is why I meditate, because
maybe
you know,
I do need to.
It's a reflection of the chatter in the mind. That's what I believe.
I love it. That's great. Well, Amy, thanks so much for joining me today. I always look forward to talking with you, and I want to thank you for taking the time to share your knowledge with our listeners. You've given our listeners so many things that they can take back and apply to make a positive change in their personal and professional lives. If you enjoyed today's conversation, I highly recommend that you subscribe to Amy's podcast, The Conscious Habit, which we will link this episode transcript, or consider scheduling time with Amy herself to conduct some professional development activities with your teams. So, Amy, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
If you're on LinkedIn, like, that's definitely my jam. I would say find me on LinkedIn under Amy Woodall. And you can always...
W-O-O-D-A-L-L.
Yes.
Just like it sounds, Woodall.
Woodall. A compound word. I remember learning in the first grade. They can email me also, amy@theconscioushabit.com.
Theconscioushabit.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Well, Amy, you know that we'll have you join us more here at Direct Employers, and I love the fact that you're able to come in today and have this conversation in person.
Yeah, so yeah.
Anyway, thanks again.
Thank you for tuning in for another episode of the DE Talk podcast. Stay connected with Direct Employers on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and subscribe to our emails by visiting directemployers.org/subscribe to receive notifications of new episodes, webinars, events, and more.